This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiya Swuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
At this point, I feel like he's stopped digging the hole, right? Let's just, you know, get away from that. Let's create something new. And I think there's, you know, there's at the very least there's an opportunity, you know, to bounce back.
That was University of Cincinnati journalism professor Jeffrey Blevins on Elon Musk's decision to replace Twitter and its iconic blue bird. Details coming up. Also, Algerian firefighters are battling wildfires that have killed at least 34 people. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. In Senegal, unexpectedly, heavy rains have flooded outlying districts of the capital, Dakar, and forced the cancellation of regional train service. Some parts of the national highways also have been flooded. Earlier today, reporter Alpha Diallo was in Keur Massar, one of the hardest hit areas. He spoke with VOA's Kate Pondawson about what he saw.
The flooding is quite extensive because yesterday the rain came in the afternoon and it was so heavy that, both motorists were forced, to stop their cars and then abandon their vehicles, and then they had to wade into the water to get into, you know, higher grounds. But then the most affected part is those, you know, areas that lies, you know, on the outskirts of Dakar. I would name Keur Massar, Yembal, and Keur Mbaye Fall, and of course Fass Mbau. They were completely overflowed.
You mentioned that the heavy rain began last night. Was that the main cause of the flooding? Has there been a period of very heavy rain?
Yes, it was, the rain came at a time when people were not expecting that. You know, normally Dakar, we always have such heavy downpour, you know, in mid-August. So we have been getting, you know, heavy rain, you know, in the countryside. But Dakar, since the start of the rainy season, have never recorded, you know, this kind of a rain. So it came at a time when most people were not preparing for for a very bad situation like this. So that's the reason why some people, they were, you know, caught, you know, they were surprised that the rain came and it was so heavy that, you know, they couldn't do anything. So all they could do is just to watch to see their, you know, homes, to see their places being washed away by gushing flood waters. But it was even so it was so serious that even the fast train, the fare, the rapid train transport, even the lines, the railway lines were suspended, and then the national route, the national highway was also, you know, traffic was also suspended.
Is help getting to the victims of this flooding, the people whose homes have been destroyed, the people who are cut off and cannot get out to get help, is the government or other groups getting out to help them?
No, not at all. Until this morning around 10 o'clock local time, when I visited, you know, places like Keur Massar, which is, badly affected, there was no sign of, you know, any government aid. All we know that, you know, the mayor of those areas, they are trying to mobilize, you know, some of the youth so that they will get, you know, water pump so that they can try to flush out these, you know, waters from homes. But just about a few minutes ago, I monitored the news that the government is, convene an emergency meeting this afternoon. And then the Ministry of the Interior will be heading a delegation this afternoon or in the evening to go and visit the places which are badly damaged.
That was journalist Alpha Diallo in Dakar. He was speaking with VOA's Kate Pondawson. Alpha says there are reports a small child was swept away in the flood, but so far there are no confirmed casualties. Kenyan opposition leader Raila Odinga says his party is collecting evidence of what he called police atrocities during protests last week against new taxes and the rising cost of living. During a news conference today, Odinga said such evidence would be submitted to the International Criminal Court, where the opposition coalition vowed to pursue charges against the government for violence that human rights groups claim has left 30 people dead over the past 3 weeks. Police have been accused of shooting at protesters using live bullets in areas where the opposition enjoys wide political support. There has been no immediate comment from the government. Odinga vowed that the protests will continue, though he did not say when. The opposition had called for protests tomorrow, but later urged its supporters to instead hold a peaceful vigil to remember those who have died. President William Ruto at first commended the police for doing a good job in quelling the protests, but later cautioned them against extrajudicial killings after public outcry. Clashes between Kenya's opposition-led anti-tax protesters and police this month have left scores dead, including a prominent boxer who was shot earlier this month in Nairobi. Kenya's boxing fraternity organized an exhibition bout to honor 35-year-old Rafael Sigale, who was the capital's reigning bantamweight champion. Francis Ontumawa reports from Nairobi, Kenya.
Cheers and joy as Kenyan boxers in Nairobi's Eastlands neighborhood square off in the ring, but also emotional pain and anger. This exhibition march was held to honor boxer and coach Rafael Sigale, who Kenyan media reported was killed by police gunfire during July 12th anti-tax protests on a street he grew up. The community called Jericho and the local boxing federation are raising funds to bury Sigale, who was Nairobi's reigning bantamweight champion. Moses Chilisia is a Nairobi boxing coach.
Rafael alikuwa ni kijana mpole.
He said Raf was easy and amiable to everyone. He will pass by the streets and exchange pleasantries with everyone. We value him because he made a name through boxing and went ahead to become a national champion, becoming even more famous across the country. Married to Sigale for 13 years, Judy Wanjiko is left alone to care for the three children. She says her husband was not taking part in the protests, but simply walking home and running errands. Wanjiko says, I was sitting in the house and the sound of gunshots was getting louder and louder. I called him at around 5:35 in the evening to check on his whereabouts. I begged him to come home. Sigale was credited by many for helping to popularize boxing in his community. Wanjiko says she wants more than just his medals to remember him. She says, all I want is justice. Justice for Raf. Raf was killed by the bullet for no reason. Rights group Amnesty International says at least 18 people have been killed this month in clashes with police during opposition-led protests against the rising cost of living and tax hikes. Rights groups blame Kenyan police for being quick to use live rounds during protests and have called for faster investigations into the deaths. Hussein Khalid is an activist with the Kenyan-based rights group Haki Africa, which means Rights Africa in Swahili.
It is very unfortunate that we have lost a young man, a man who was very progressive, a man who was working with other youth in the community to actually try and alleviate the sufferings of many. And to see that he has lost his life in this manner, it's really, really unfortunate. The case of police using excessive force, unfortunately, again, is something that has been very persistent in Kenya.
Kenya's police spokesman declined to comment on the killings, including Sigale's, except to say the matter was under investigation. But with few prosecutions of Kenyan police, the odds are against Sigale's widow seeing justice. And with both the government and the opposition so far unwilling to back down, Wanjiko's children are unlikely to be the last to be left without a father. Francis Ontomwa for VOA News, Nairobi.
Conservationists in Kenya are petitioning the state to enact solutions to avoid the worst impacts from climate change, including record droughts and flooding. Activists say directives such as Kenya's lifting of a ban on logging is reversing gains made to lessen extreme weather linked to climate change. Victoria Amunga reports from Nairobi, Kenya.
Sote Lokotos has lived in this shelter in Baringo County, Kenya, for a decade now. Before this, she lived with her family on a farm. One night in 2013, water from a nearby lake engulfed their home. Fortunately, everyone escaped. She says that the water swept all their belongings and flooded their house. She says that she was separated from her other children and that she lives with her husband and only one child. Families like Lokotosis are bearing the brunt of climate change. It has affected millions around the world and is being felt every day in Kenya, where disasters like flooding and droughts have become more common over the past 20 years. Activists are demanding the Kenyan government commit to real solutions to prevent and minimize such catastrophes. Isaiah Kaaka is a member of the activist group Climate Clock.
We are trying to provide solutions and push for policy to act on, for instance, loss and damage.
Kenya's President William Ruto lifted a six-year ban on logging in July to create more jobs in timber harvesting. To conservationists, the decision undermines efforts to mitigate climate change as trees store carbon dioxide that contributes to global warming. But timber traders like Michael Oginga praise the move. He says, let them lift the ban so we can at least go back to our normal business. Business is low, he says. I can get one customer a week. I could get about 10 customers a week before the ban. This is what we depend on for food. Global temperatures have already risen an average of 1.1 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels, according to the United Nations. Droughts have become more chronic in the Horn of Africa, displacing millions of people, sinking them into poverty and hunger. Aid group Minority Rights Group International is trying to help villagers in Kenya cope with the changes. The group's Africa media officer, Billy Rothungeyo, explains.
They need to adapt, so they need to change the ways they use soil. They need to make conscious choices around farming practices, how they cultivate, how to plant trees.
Environmentalists say by adopting new policies at both the governmental and the individual level, Kenya can guard against many of the worst impacts of climate change. Victoria Amunga for VOA News, Nairobi.
Delays equals denial. Act in time.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Uhibi in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. A white X on a black background has replaced the famous Bluebird logo for the desktop version of Twitter, but it has yet to appear on the mobile app. Twitter owner Elon Musk made the replacement official yesterday. The billionaire owner has long envisioned creating a super app that will offer a number of services from online banking to messaging via video. Jeffrey Belevins, journalism and public affairs professor at the University of Cincinnati, tells VOA's Carol Van Dam that rebranding the social media platform is not a bad idea for Musk.
His stewardship of Twitter has been anything but successful so far. He's alienated a lot of core users of Twitter. You know, for instance, you know, making people paying to be verified, for instance, that used to be a real status symbol, where now it's just a cheap gimmick that anyone can get, right? You have all these parody accounts that are, you know, verified, if you will. So it has become, you know, kind of a joke, along with, you know, limiting, you know, the number of posts that you have by reinstating all of these accounts that had been booted off. So at this point, I feel like he's stopped digging the hole, right? Let's just, you know, get away from that. Let's create something new. And I think there's, you know, there's at the very least there's an opportunity, you know, to bounce back. It's Twitter is essentially destroyed at this point. So why not, you know, build something new and try to make it distinct than what it was before. It'll certainly, you know, change, you know, the narrative, but also has the opportunity to do something new.
This sounds to me like you're saying, you know, stop digging the hole, start over brand new. And just he's trying to basically tell people to forget about Twitter, which is kind of hard, isn't it, when people are so wedded to Twitter. In other countries too, especially in Africa, there's a lot of Twitter followers and people who use that as their main communication.
Right. Exactly. And there are a lot of people who, you know, were loyalists, but really those people have been let down anyway. And I count myself in that group. You know, Twitter has been my bread and butter, not only personally and professionally. It's, you know, it's been the main social medium that I've used for professional networking, that kind of thing, but also in my research. You know, Twitter's API was great. You know, they would give, you know, academicians, you know, access to it. You could, you know, the application system to be able to access tweets. It was pretty efficient. And some of us have stuck around anyway because, you know, we've put so much time and effort into it. I mean, I think if you're someone who is upset with what he's done and you're still around, like I am, that says something. I'm going to stick around for X too.
What about this? It's going to be the everything app.
Right. Right. Well, yeah, I think that's also somewhat of a response to Threads in the sense that, you know, Zuckerberg had, you know, kind of a flex move with Threads, where it was very, you know, Twitter-like, you know, having, you know, Instagram, you know, which is very visual, Threads, which is, you know, more about short text messages, and then, you know, Facebook, which tends to be a little more personal, had kind of the, you know, the holy trinity, whereas, you know, Twitter, it was just so much more of its own thing. So trying to rebrand this as X and making it a, you know, a one-stop shop that's going to be, you know, everything. Like I said earlier, it's not the worst idea I've heard.
That's Jeffrey Blivins, a professor of journalism and public affairs at the University of Cincinnati in the Midwestern United States. He was speaking to VOA's Carol Van Dam here in Washington. Algerian firefighters are battling wildfires that have killed at least 34 people across the tender, dry north and destroyed homes, coastal resorts and vast forest areas. Witnesses told the French news agency AFP that fires raged like a blowtorch. TV footage showed charred cars, burned-out shops and smoldering fields and scrub land as thousands of residents were evacuated. The news service says severe fires raged through the mountain forests of the Kabylia region on the Mediterranean coast, fanned by hot winds amid blistering summer heat that peaked at 48 degrees Celsius yesterday. President Abdelmadjid Tebboune sent his condolences to the families of those killed, among them 10 soldiers trapped by flames at the Beni Kisela in Bejaj province. A civil defense information officer told the AFP that the Interior Ministry is expected to soon announce the total extinction of all fires. This as the public prosecutor of Bijaya ordered an investigation into the causes of the fires and possible perpetrators. African countries are spending billions of dollars trying to penetrate the biggest outbound tourist market in the world, but with limited success. China is Africa's largest single trade partner, but its citizens remain hesitant to explore a continent that's often in the news for the wrong reasons like conflict and food shortages. Darren Taylor reports.
Kenya, South Africa, Tanzania, and Egypt are among the African countries battling for a bigger slice of the huge pie that's Chinese tourism. In 2019, before the COVID-19 pandemic decimated global tourism, 155 million Chinese citizens visited foreign destinations. But only 94,000 of them visited South Africa, the African country that attracts the most Chinese visitors. In comparison, government figures show about 280,000 tourists came from Britain and 260,000 arrived from the United States.
It's not an easy market to get into. It does have a lot of potential, but it needs a lot of good understanding.
Mike Fabricius specializes in tourism management, consulting and marketing. He's worked for the United Nations and World Bank on tourism projects. Fabricius says African countries are mistakenly targeting sheer numbers of Chinese visitors.
I don't think Africa is a place for the mass tourism Chinese market. And often the figures are cited, you know, about this massive, huge, big market. But I think when one zones it down and you bring it down to the market niches and the market segments, it becomes a lot more manageable and, you know, finding the right partner.
His advice is to focus on attracting segments of the Chinese market, like younger tourists seeking adventurous experiences such as climbing Mount Kilimanjaro, and Chinese people wanting to experience the culture and cuisine of Africa and its diverse wildlife. Even then, says Fabricius, challenges remain.
Service delivery needs to be improved, and I think there is a general avoidance of risk in that market, especially now post-COVID. That's another thing, is assurances of safety, and the safety issue is the big deterrent.
He explains that many Chinese perceive Africa as dangerous. Rosemary Anderson is chairperson of FedHasa, which represents hospitality industries across southern Africa. She says most African governments stifle tourism with needlessly strict visa rules.
People have to present themselves either to the embassy in Beijing or Shanghai, or otherwise a visa tourist center. China is vast, so that would be quite a logistical and cost and time effort to actually do that. So we really make it very difficult for Chinese to visit us at the moment.
Anderson says the world's top destinations offer the Chinese online visa application services, and Africa must follow suit or it'll be left behind. Kenya and Tanzania say they're in the process of simplifying their visa requirements for Chinese tourists. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Mining giant De Beers says a $2.3 billion mining tunnel in South Africa has started to produce its first diamonds. The French news agency AFP says in 2012, the global company started digging beneath the country's largest diamond mine, Venetia, seeking to reach gems at a depth of more than 1,000 meters. De Beers described the first diamonds as a key milestone, but did not give further details. Venetia is an open mine in northeastern South Africa, close to the border with Zimbabwe and Botswana, that closed in December 2022, after 30 years of production. De Beers says the underground operation, employing about 4,300 people, is now 70% complete. The facility is expected to produce about 4 million carats of diamonds annually. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Nicole Peters, and our engineer, Zubair Al-Tayeb, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Are you wandering around lost in a musical desert? Well, follow your ears to the fantastic, the one and only African music mix on The Voice of America. Bathe yourself in this musical oasis. from the north to the south and from the east to the west. The African Music Mix plays only the best. Yes, sir.
Tune in at 200, 300, 1200, and 1300 UTC GMT.